Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Greg Gaynor from Detroit, Michigan. And you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
That was the voice of our 2018 predictions champion, Greg Gaynor, who is entered again into the Scousel Mousel Predictions Challenge of 2019 here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. I'm David Law. Catherine Whittaker is here. Grant Matt is here. We are in the lobby of Catherine's hotel. You can hear a vacuum cleaner in the background at 2:10 a.m. after a tumultuous day of tennis, but one that has ended so late room service isn't even working. So Catherine, when we arrived, was eating a cheese sandwich with no butter and a pepperami. That is
my first of two pepperamis.
Yes, that is the sort of cuisine and nutrition that we have here on the Tennis Podcast halfway through a tournament in the middle of the night. And the reason it is the middle of the night is because we have just witnessed 6 hours of epic tennis starting, and I think we need to start here on episode 501, folks, because we forgot to tell everybody on the podcast that it was episode 500 yesterday. So happy 501.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, happy 501, Matt.
Thank you.
Yeah, right.
this is about number 21 for me. But.
Yes, okay, well, you know, you're on the team now. And 501 episodes, and I think all of them have mentioned the name Roger Federer one time or another. Is this one going to, but he's out.
He is out. The hands of the man who is probably ultimately responsible for my sad cheese sandwich, butterless cheese sandwich dinner, Stefanos Tsitsipas, who, I'm overall not resentful of.
No. Everything else he's done this evening has been good, except that bit.
Because he said yes to a Eurosport interview after his extraordinary four-set victory in the most breathtaking, dramatic, spine-tingling match on the men's side of the tournament. He said yes to the interview. It took about 4 hours to come to press, during which time I got the call, because I was back in my hotel room in my pants. I'd already ordered room service. It was a burger. It was going to be great. I'd ordered a lovely crisp glass of white, and I get the call saying, we've got a Tsitsipas interview, would you like to do it? Of course I'd like to do it. Great, get down here now. So I considered going in pyjamas. I am recording this podcast in pyjamas, but instead I hauled some clothing on. But just to clarify, because this is why everyone's tuning in, room service is still operational, but that burger that I'd ordered, presumably there was a man standing at my door for most of the evening, just knocking with the burger.
Right.
And I'm now too ashamed to call back room service to reorder a burger. So I've had a...
Matt, go on, call him.
To 7-Eleven, I've had a butterless cheese sandwich and two pepperonis.
Okay, so on the plus
I'm
side...
I'm good to go, but... Let's talk tennis.
Let's talk tennis here on the Cheese Sandwich Podcast. So what do we think about this match? Federer's defeat. First of all, was this like his defeats against Kevin Anderson and John Millman? Because he lost in four sets. He's only played in the last year three matches that have gone beyond three sets, and he's lost a lot.
Yeah, that was a very interesting stat you dug up there, I thought.
Grant Matt's saying I dug up a good stat.
and he won the first set in all those matches, so why is he losing these leads, which is, you know, something he needs to look at. And actually, really, it was a match that sort of changed on that second set tiebreak, I thought, because Federer was probably the better player up until then. He was the one fluffing his lines on break points, but at least he was creating them. And then somehow Tsitsipas dug out that second set tiebreak. And I always think with Federer, he's got this tremendous sense of the moment. He's able to sort of turn it on, sort of know when to take a dip, when to press. And I thought Tsitsipas really had that as well. And he rose in all the big moments. And then in the second half of the match, he was the better player. And it was actually Federer who was the one sort of hanging on a little bit. And he did well to push it so sort of close in those final two sets.
I've never seen such an extraordinary ability to rise to the occasion, to play the big, in the macro and the micro sense, to play the big points well. I mean, the average service game length at the end of that first set over the first two sets was 5 minutes for Tsitsipas and 1:15 for Federer. I know he plays quickly on his own serve, but that is an extraordinary discrepancy and tells you everything about the relative ease with which they were holding serve. Federer was dominating both
pressure
those sets.
He was dealing with
absolute constant pressure. And most people feel like, well, I'm going to give way eventually, I'm hanging on, but he mentally looked to me like he felt like he was always in control despite the scoreboard, and I find that extraordinary. And you just, in matches like that where it's, you know, a potential changing of the guard match, which is what we're now pitching this as, and which in press conference Tsitsipas seemed pretty comfortable with it being pitched as, usually you're waiting for the younger guy to crack, for the bow to break. And in this, I wasn't even waiting for it. I could see from the word go, really, that's not what this guy does. He can just handle it.
Federer's two chances were to beat him by playing amazing tennis, or to wear him down physically. And we did see him have massage to his legs late in that fourth set to Tsitsipas's legs. But you're right, the way he carries himself, and that's why I thought he had a chance of winning this, is just because of his sheer presence, the way he carries himself. I mean, apart from the fact that I think his game generally actually matches up really well against Federer, because he has a bit of everything. He has that dexterity and ability to rescue situations within a rally, but then inject pace. He plays like a grown-up, you know. He's not a junior. Like Shapovalov still looks, even though he hits the ball hard.
He made Shapovalov and, I mean, almost Zverev. They made them look like children tonight, didn't he? You know, that performance compared to the vast majority of...
Well, that's the thing. Zverev has not produced anything
on that stage
at a slam yet. He's done it. He did it at the tour finals, but...
That description of rising to the moment and the occasion is not something yet that you can... that you can apply to Zverev. And can you imagine how much Zverev, knowing what we know about their relationship, hated what happened tonight?
Yeah.
You know that answer that you got from Kyrgios at the start of the tournament about, oh no, I don't mind seeing my young rivals, my contemporaries, do well. You know, I don't see us as competitors. That ain't Zverev's attitude. he did not enjoy tonight, I'm quite sure.
I don't think he did either. I personally thought that Federer played pretty well tonight.
He did.
I did not feel that this was the same as those other two matches. And that's why I think what Tsitsipas did tonight was so mind-blowing. He beat him in four sets in a sharpshooters contest. I mean, crikey, that takes some doing.
There was no bailing out from Federer.
Yeah.
Which
he was tight. The whole game was tight, wasn't it?
Yeah,
which
there absolutely was with Milman and possibly latterly in that Anderson match as well, but certainly vividly and without question in that Milman match. We know how challenging the physical conditions were in the John Millman match. But we'll never know the answer to this, I don't think. I don't think that Federer lost that match physically. However, I think he knew he would lose it physically if it went to five.
Yeah.
And that puts a different complexion on it for him in that fourth set. That he's not used to feeling like, oh my goodness, I can't do this if it goes to five. It was almost anticipation of not being able to do it physically, I think, became a factor, the need to win that fourth set.
And he said he felt he needed to win that second set in his press conference.
Wow.
He said, you know, that was, he really said, I have massive regrets over not winning that second set and just not taking my break points, perhaps because he did think, you know, if I don't win this, it's going to be at least four sets, and you know, the chances are I might lose one of the next two. Since past playing so well, suddenly we're in a fifth. On Federer's level, yeah, I agree. I thought it was pretty good, but I did think his forehand was a little bit all over the place, I must say. And part of that, I think, was probably Tsitsipas pressuring him, and Tsitsipas got that ability to take the ball early and kind of do to Federer what he does to other people, take their time away. But there were quite a lot of forehand errors I picked up from Federer, but, you know, I agree with you. Most of the credit has to go to Tsitsipas.
Well,
it wasn't a bad Federer performance.
You are always going to make errors when you're going for it the way he does, and he hit more than 60 winners.
Oh yeah.
So
and between them, they came into the net over 100 times.
Right.
I mean, when was the last time you saw?
And Tsitsipas, he can handle
volley
himself, can't he? At the net.
Crikey, yeah.
Doesn't panic, does he?
It was one where
that's the match that he wanted. You know, I watched that practice session yesterday. They were preparing for it to be that match. That's how they wanted it to be.
Yeah, well, he said he's been watching a lot of YouTube videos of Federer's matches.
Yeah, didn't he sort of explain to us all what YouTube was?
He did.
In that press conference.
And there was a moment where I thought he compared himself to Tommy Robredo.
Which, he didn't explicitly name Tommy Robredo. In fact, he went out of his way not name Tommy Robredo, which I think is a shame if he was referring to Tommy Robredo, because it would have made his day. But he said he was inspired by a performance, a recent-ish, you know,
in the last few years.
In the last few years, he said, performance by somebody with a similar game style to him that beat Federer at the US Open.
Single-handed back.
It can only be Tommy Robredo.
It can only be Tommy.
Go on, Tommy.
he also said, on the subject of things said in press afterwards, I mean, Tsitsipas, you can pick out, I mean, he is a quote machine. But without meaning to be a quote machine, it's just everything he says is absolute gold dust. He said, I'm here to win the tournament, you know. He's not done.
He said,
I presume I'll be able to produce that against Bautista Agut, and if I do, obviously I'll win. That is a slight paraphrase, but that's what I took from it. And going back to Federer, Federer said he intends to play the clay.
Which is
noteworthy.
He said that to the Swiss press.
That's a big deal, isn't it? I mean, he hasn't played on clay for the last 2 years.
Correct. Yeah.
So, I think the gist of what I read was that it was about experiences and enjoying it again.
But he said, "I want to have fun."
Yeah.
Which I can't really imagine slogging out on the clay at Roland Garros is going to be that fun. But
it's different kind of tennis. But I think he. Yeah, it's about. I think it is experiences. He wants to experience it one last time.
Well,
that's the question.
Those are the words, isn't it? It says to me that, you know, I'm not saying this is last Federer's year on tour. This is Federer's last year on tour. I'm saying he thinks there's a chance it could be,
yeah.
A decent chance it could be,
yeah.
And therefore wants to make sure. The only way to now make sure that he sees Paris one last time. Well. Red Paris rather than indoor Paris is to play clay this year.
Yeah,
that's what I read
and I thought that if he is targeting the Olympics, you know, to play the Olympics, I'd be surprised if he wanted to add a lot of clay into his schedule next year.
True.
Very good point.
Yeah,
and surely he is regardless of how he feels now. Can you envisage, unless he gets a big injury, he ain't going to retire before that Olympics,
no,
is he?
Unless,
three sets, no, hard court Olympics.
I think he'll go for that. I think that makes sense for him to go for. That match had the feel of 2001 Wimbledon for me. Sampras against Federer.
That's what Tsitsipas thinks.
That's also on his YouTube playlist.
Yeah, it's on his YouTube playlist. Interestingly, he cites his idols growing up as Sampras and Federer. The guy's 20, right?
Yeah.
Sampras won his last US Open in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
That's 17 years ago.
Yeah.
He was three.
And, of course, Pete Sampras has got some Greek ancestry.
Yeah.
And I think that might play into that a little bit as well. But just, I mean, look, obviously, I think the knee-jerk reaction when I mentioned that match on Twitter is to say, oh, so you're writing off Federer and you're all this. No, I'm not doing that. And I'm also not saying Tsitsipas is going to win 20 slams. And, I mean, look, Federer lost the next match against Tim Henman. Pete Sampras went on and won another Grand Slam. These things can happen. Bautista Agut could beat Tsitsipas. I mean, he beat Cilic today, he's beaten Andy Murray, he's beaten John Millman. It could certainly happen. I don't think it will. I think Tsitsipas will come back and do it again. But it was the manner in which he kind of took him on at his own game that reminded me of Federer against Sampras. And Tsitsipas was a clear winner.
He described it best himself, both that match in 2001 and his match today. He said, when idols become rivals.
Oh, goodness.
He just tossed that out there to a room full of journalists. Scribble, scribble, scribble.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it was amazing. And it wasn't even close to being the biggest shock of the day. It might have been the biggest moment of the day. It wasn't the biggest shock of the day.
No, I suppose in terms of really surprises of the day, that would be Kerber, wouldn't it? And
there were people around the place that thought that Tsitsipas might win tonight.
Yes.
There's nobody that thought Kerber was losing love and two to Danielle Collins.
No. And I mean, Danielle Collins is a good player, but still, that we were watching that.
That is one
together,
of the most breathtaking, stunning results in Grand Slam history.
And what Collins and Tsitsipas have in common is their complete self-assuredness about it all.
And an element of being comfortable being a disruptor, of being comfortable with not necessarily fitting in exactly with what their respective tours want them to be.
And what maybe players want them to be, and media might expect players to be, and even fans. I mean, Collins, some of the quotes she came out with, she is positively confrontational and she used the word disruptor. I think that's a good word. She does not care who she upsets, and I think it's great. It's great.
Well, it's all part of her game plan.
Yeah, I've never seen anything so fearless today. Yeah. It was unreal. Kerber was utterly shell-shocked. She was waiting for the other shoe to drop.
How about when I showed you that come on? She did it literally in her face.
Literally in her face.
That'd be like if I did it right now, and I'm not going to because I'm...
Yeah, up at the net, she'd hit a drop shot. Kerber was trying to get there, so she was running towards her. They were about to sort of clash heads, lock horns. Well, not literally, because they don't have horns, but you know what I mean. Daniel Collins did a double arms fist pump in her face.
And she did it with a full stare out and everything.
She is a heck of a story. I can't think of any other notable female player in recent times that's come through the college system. It was a very conscious decision by her to do it. She speaks incredibly reflectively about it. She said, I see all these people around me that made this, you know, life-defining decision aged 14. And I think that's not smart. It's smart if you end up being Maria Sharapova or whatever, but for most of them, it doesn't end up being smart. And, you know, we discussed it before my interview with her, David, her feeling of liberation for having that college degree with her, knowing that she always has something to fall back on.
Yeah.
Her pride at having that degree. I think she was the first member of her family to go to college. She didn't come from much. There is absolutely no sense of entitlement about her at all, which I think is why she can kind of get away a bit more than some with being so in your face. You know, you can see how she's fought tooth and nail for all of it. And I think she's fantastic.
She's going to upset some players, but her view appears to be, well, so be it. Good. Good. Fine. Let's have it.
Yeah,
she plays Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova next, who has shot.
Matt's got one right.
Yeah. I finally have a correct prediction at 2 o'clock in the morning when no one was watching.
And you were a bit worried.
David was watching.
David was
watching eagerly from the Five Live commentary booth.
I have to say, I mean, there's not many occasions in the last 25 years when I have lamented being asked to watch a tennis match for a living, but on that particular occasion, at the start of the third set at 2 in the morning, I was slightly upset.
And I know this is a point that's been made before, so we won't dwell on it, but that wasn't because of the quality of the tennis match. That was a decent tennis match, and it shouldn't have been put on after a men's match that was always going to be had a strong likelihood of going long.
Yeah,
it's just not on.
A better way to do it would have been to put a doubles match after that, wouldn't it, or something like that, you know. But
they might have made you commentate on that.
No,
we're putting McEnroe and McEnroe versus Johansson and Haarhus.
That's the show opener tomorrow,
brought to you by David Law
on
ball
his
by
own.
Ball,
yeah. Stevens had a point for... She had 3 break points for 5-1 first set. And Pavlyuchenkova, who is one of the game's underachievers, in my opinion.
Yes.
She has
not
such
even
a...
seeded.
She has a massive
She's
game.
She's got everything.
She's ranked in the 40s right now. I mean, she has been in the teens in the past. But, you know, her first Australian Open was 2007, 12 years ago.
I remember when she was the... highest ranked teenager in the world.
Yeah.
And she won
all.
Had it all.
She won. I think she won 2 slams. The first 2 slams of the year as a junior, once. But I don't know. It hasn't come together so far. But she just blasted Stevens off the court really today, and her and Collins could be pretty tasty. I mean, you sent me a link or two to the run-in that Stevens and Pavlyuchenkova had. And yeah, Collins is going to be right there.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What else has happened today? What are the notable results?
Ash Barty. Let's do Ash Barty.
Yeah.
You got to fight for the right... to Barty.
I was not expecting that. And she won 6-4 in the third.
I almost went for the Jamie Vardy's having a party chant, but substituting the word. But it doesn't go well.
It's not as good as that, is it?
No.
So.
Also, I don't think broadcastable. Anyway.
Okay. She was 4 love up in the deciding set. She ended up winning 6-4. And I wasn't watching this. It was a bit of a squeaker, wasn't it?
Yeah, she saw the finish line, and Sharapova, you know, the shackles came off a little bit, because Sharapova's game, after she won the first set, completely collapsed.
Fell apart.
Someone said it was like a poorly made Sharapavlova, and it and it just completely fell apart. The double faults, rather cruelly, on the Australian Open app. You can search by statistics, and they have tournament leader with like a little trophy, and they have it for double faults. And Sharapova is got that trophy. I think she hit something like 27 double faults through her four matches. I mean, just a ton today. And Ashley Barty's slicing and dicing and, you know, really threw her off a bit. And she said at the end, you know, I just had to keep chipping away. And it literally was that, literally, because her chip slice, Ashley Barty, is just such a joy to watch. Such a modern take on a classic game that she has. Her backhand is sort of classic, and her forehand, she really goes after it.
She's a foil to Maria Sharapova in every possible way, isn't she?
Made for a good match, and actually, it was pretty tasty out there, wasn't it, as well? Because Sharapova was trying a few things, perhaps. She had that
seven-minute bathroom break. And we know the loser quite nearby.
I know there are some outside courts where...
Well, Ash Barty thinks she went back to the locker room.
Well, are they allowed to do that?
So a seven-minute bathroom break, and then she got given a time violation, which
was greeted as though Ash Barty won the tournament. So
and then afterwards, she was asked by one of the journalists in the press conference about whether those circumstances upset her, and she said, "What did she say?" She says, "What do you expect me to say to that?"
What do you expect me to say to that? And he repeated it.
He said, "Well, maybe you could just tell the truth."
And she said, "I think that's a silly question."
Yeah.
And then she was asked a question that she's been asked plenty of times before, I believe, by Stu Fraser.
Yeah.
You were taking meldonium legally for health concerns for many years. Have you found a substitute?
I think what he said was, how does that affect you
in these physical matches?
And she said, is there another question, please?
Yeah.
I'm not sure there was a please.
The look on her face. I mean, I saw the video of those two circumstances, those two questions. And, oh dear, it was uncomfortable
but
to look at.
Bottom line, she's not that relevant to force in tennis anymore. You know, fourth round, she's just settled at a sort of third, fourth round. You know, this was good. She obviously beat defending champion and everything. She can still put in good performances.
Yeah, like she beat Halep.
You know, like most players ranked sort of 20, 30 in the world or whatever. She was 30th seed here, wasn't she? So she'll probably remain or jump a little bit on that. But this is where she is. She's not really realistically a contender for Grand Slams. And I'm going to go back to scheduling just quickly again, very, very quickly, but your only home player with a realistic prospect of winning the thing, I know that's a stretch, but you know, relative to the other Aussies, against a five-time Grand Slam champion who, you know, was your star player at the draw last year instead of Serena Williams. I just can't see a scenario where that match, the equivalent men's match, would have been put second on in the day session.
Well, but where would you have put it?
First on the night session?
Ahead of Federer against Tsitsipas.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because they're doing tomorrow with Halep Serena.
Yeah, I think a women's match should go first in the night session. And I would have put that women's match
But then aren't we in the same position of just having ridiculous o'clock matches?
Yes, but you don't have matches starting at such ridiculous o'clock, and you also people are more likely to stay late for a match they're already invested in than to stay for the start of a new match. Well, you would end up with less.
I mean, I can certainly promise you that scheduling of Pavlyuchenko vs Stevens was just, that was no good for anybody. It was just depressing,
it's insulting,
to be honest. And they played really well, and there were about 500 people in a 14,000-seat stadium. So it was disappointing.
And if you'd reversed the matches, there wouldn't have been 500 people left at the end of Federer Tsitsipas, even if it was at 2 o'clock in the morning. Mm.
I've asked the question, by the way, again, about the scheduling of Halep and Venus Williams, and I've been promised I will get an answer, and I still haven't got one yet, but I'm going to keep going. So we'll find out.
David's email updates. That's a new segment on the podcast.
Francis Tiafoe. Francis Tiafoe, I've been told, I should say it, not TFO, Tiafoe, has beaten Grigor Dimitrov 7-5, 7-6, 6-7, 7-5. He was fantastic again, wasn't he? I mean, I feel for Grigor. We were watching that together as well. And I did think in that fourth set, I thought maybe Tiafoe had gone, but he just kept on coming.
Is that a minor under... I think there was one moment... I mean, we've all got carried away with Grigor at moments this week, but you said, oh, he's got this.
Who?
Grigor.
Oh, in the fourth set, I thought he had. No, I absolutely own that. It was when Agassi stood up at the end of the third, and I thought, right, the connection that Catherine told me all about between the two, and you could see Agassi giving it the big fist pump, and we know that Agassi's won slams later in his career and all the rest of it, and then we saw Tiafoe get some treatment and he still prevailed. I mean, it was mightily impressive.
It was. I mean, he's for all the incredible moments we've had today, Tiafoe is the only player that's made me cry.
Aww. What was it that did it?
That reaction of his, and I could see that it was overwhelming. We were unfortunately watching all of that on mute. We were in a multi-screen media situation, so all the screens are on mute. So I went back and watched that on-court interview that he did.
He's perfect, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was absolute perfection what he said. You know, talking about 10 years ago, I promised my mum that I'd make it and changed my parents' lives, and here I am. And goodness me, if you can't get swept up in that, then what can you get swept up in?
Roberto Bautista Agut, 6-4 in the fifth, his third 5-set match victory out of four, beating Marin Cilic, last year's runner-up. So fantastic performance from him. He will now face Tsitsipas, won't he? Is that right?
I know who Tsitsipas thinks is winning that.
Nadal absolutely wiped the floor with Thomas Berdych. Wasn't expecting that.
4 minutes. It was 6-love.
Six love, 6-1, 7-6.
Was it six love, two love before he won a game?
Yeah. Because the big question everyone had this morning was, is Thomas Berdych going to upset Rafael Nadal?
And David had the answer.
And about half an hour in, it was, is Thomas Berdych actually going to win a game against Rafael Nadal?
It all changed so quickly. And that match was happening simultaneously with Tiafoe, being two sets love up, and it may be looking like the sort of most dramatic period of that match, and Danielle Collins sploshing, was Simon Briggs's word, sploshing his pick for the title, Angelique Kerber. And then sort of you look up, and since you last looked at the screen, Thomas Berdych has gone 8-love down on Rod Laver Arena, and you just go
28% first serve.
Don't need to look at that screen anymore.
I mean, you know, Thomas,
I must say then, Nadal is A, playing a lot better than I thought he would, B, getting through these matches so quickly that he's not, you know, his physical condition isn't so much of a concern that we thought it might be, and C, with a few players in that section of the draw losing, you know, Anderson's lost, Federer's lost now, you know, he's still got tough matches ahead of him, but the draw has opened up and he's just playing really well. And he did play well on the non-clay events last year. I think we probably should give him credit for what he did do in those matches. The problem is he just fell apart physically, but if he's capable physically, his tennis is right there.
No, it really is. I think the one thing just to add on the Tsitsipas and Tiafoe points, I know people get upset when Federer loses and all the rest of it, and some people will lose interest in the tournament and all everything, but a lot of people also discovered Stefanos Tsitsipas today. It's really good for the sport. It's far better to have a handover in which these guys rip it from them like that and announce themselves on the big stage by being in the Roger Federer spotlight for a bit than it would be for Federer to just go off with a whimper and have his finish and then the others pick up the pieces.
Yeah, well, my brother, who is the world's biggest Federer fan, whose YouTube recommendations are entirely Roger Federer highlights reels, sent me a message earlier saying, well, if that's the passing of the baton, I'm very pleased with who it's been passed to. And I think, I mean, what Federer fan couldn't feel that way, really?
Well, so there are a few that don't. But
David.
I do feel when once they come to terms with it, once they can accept that he stops, that Tsitsipas might be the one that they gravitate towards eventually, a lot of them anyway. Anyway, tomorrow, by the way...
Hey, Petra Kvitova.
Well done, Petra Kvitova.
It was an awful long time ago, but boy, did she not take an awful long time to beat Amanda Anisimova.
Yeah, thrashed her. Lost three games.
It was brilliant. And now Barty plays Kvitova, rerun of the Sydney final, which was a barnstormer.
Who's winning that?
I'm unable to, in your Twitter words, not do head over heart. I mean, I love Petra Kvitova, and her story is just as good. It's all great. All the tennis, apart from the fact that none of us are sleeping.
Wow.
It's all, the tennis is so great.
It's only 5-3. What are we doing? Right, tomorrow, quickly. Naomi Osaka against Anastasia Sevastova at 12 local time. That'd be good. That'd be a good match. And then Alexander Zverev against Milos Raonic. Who's winning that?
I've got a feeling for Raonic.
Yeah, me too. He's playing so well.
I'll make up my mind later. Serena Halep.
Stitch up.
Serena Halep against Serena Williams. Oh, this is good stuff, this. Right, we're going to predict all these in our newsletter, okay? Novak Djokovic, if you don't fall asleep before then. Novak Djokovic against Daniel Medvedev.
I've got my pyjamas on, David.
Yeah, all right, well, that's a footnote, minor. Madison Keys against Elena Svitolina. Garbiñe Muguruza against Karolina Pliskova. Who's winning that? I'm going Muguruza. I think she's
looking
good.
I need to look
good.
At their head-to-head.
I think Pliskova's got the advantage on the head-to-head.
Has she?
Yeah, but I'm going Muguruza.
Whoever I say, I'll almost certainly be the other person.
Hey, you're on a roll now.
One out of one.
One out
is that a roll?
One out of 12.
Yeah.
But
one out of my last one.
This is one. Right, okay. And Borna Čoric.
It starts here, episode 501.
Borna Čoric stuffed out on court
Luca
number
Pui.
Whatever, 157.
I think Čoric in that, yeah.
Okay.
We both had Čoric in our quarters, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we all did, actually.
Yeah. Right, I'm going to bed. I'm going to finish my beer. This has been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, executive produced by tennisballs.com. Our mascot is Rio with a Y, dog. And Catherine and Matt and myself will be back tomorrow. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.